Non, das sind für die Christen, was da wird die Lässe, immer die noch die Benachte, ich kann mich nicht hören. Namas Jesus, wo die Devi, wo er lange verzeihen, in der Jesus, in der Heilig, wo die Dese tala. Om again, Jani Tsinan Dasya, Zanam Zanam Salakaya, Saksu Samilitam, Zainat Tasmai, Sri Ravinima, Sri Chaitanya Manavistam, Stapitam, Zanamitale, Sam, Anyone remember anything from yesterday? Yesterday's class?
Discussing the question, why is the devotees of Shiva are much more than devotees of Krishna? And why is Krishna is so opulent and Shiva is
yes. And Yudhisthira Maharaj had asked this question to Krishna himself, and Krishna's answer was this: Yes, Yahamanu Brahmi, Visha, Tadanam Sanai, Tato, Adhanam, Tyajantyasya, Sajana, Dukkha, Dukkitam. And then we heard that Krishna uses the method of taking things away from a devotee to cause the devotee to take deeper and deeper shelter of him, deeper shelter of him causes the devotee's karma to drop off like the petals of a wilted lotus flower. A mature devotee therefore recognizes the superficial good and bad conditions he encounters as signs of the direct guidance of his ever well wishing Lord. Now we'll move to the third paragraph. But if the Lord is so compassionate to his devotees, why does he expose them to special suffering? After all, he's all powerful. Can't he find another way to purify them except making the people, I love you so much, this is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you? This is answered by an analogy. A very affectionate father takes the responsibility of restricting his children's play and making them go to a school. Dhruv, you will go to school one day? Was that a yes? He knows that this is a genuine expression of his love for them, even if the children fail to understand. The children just want to continue their childish playing. Similarly, the Supreme Lord Vishnu is mercifully strict with all his dependents, not only with immature devotees struggling to become qualified. Even perfect saints like Prahlad, Dhruv, and Yudhisthira were subject to great tribulations, and all was for their glorification. After the battle of Kurukshetra, Sri Bhishma Dev described to King Yudhisthira his wonder at this, how Krishna acts the way he does with his devotees. Yatra tamasato rajan gadapani vikodara krishnas tugandhi bhakshapam surat krishna tato vipad nahi asikari chit rajan pumam veda vajitsitam yas vigigyasa yukta muyanti kavayopihi yad vigyasaya yukta muyanti kavayopihi. Oh, how wonderful is the influence of inevitable time. It is irreversible. It forces its will, even though time is impersonal in a sense. It's not impersonable, personal, when Krishna is wielding it. It is irreversible. Otherwise, how can there be reverses in the presence of King Yudhisthira, the son of the demigod controlling religion, Bhima, the great fighter with a club, the great bowman, Arjun, with his mighty weapon, Gandiva, and above all, the Lord, the direct well-wisher of the Pandavas? O King, no one can know the plan of the Lord, Sri Krishna, even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. So this is regard to when Bhishma Dev was lying very close to his death,
after the battle of Kurukshetra, it was just about time for him to leave this world. He had the benediction that he could leave. He would only die when he so desired it. So he was waiting. And it was the time. He was quite old at that time, hundreds of years. He was still so powerful. And he was waiting to will himself to die. And he was waiting for what? Does anyone remember?
Auspicious.
Huh? The sun to go to the north.
Yes.
So that means there is, that's called Uttara. Uttara means north. Uttarayana. But there is also a secret meaning of the word Uttarayana, which means he who entered within Uttar. When Parikshit Maharaj needed to be saved from the Brahmastra, Krishna himself entered within Uttara. So that's the other meaning of Uttarayana. Ayana means entered within Uttara. So he was waiting for Krishna, and he was waiting for the Pandavas to come. So when Krishna came with the Pandavas, after the battle had been won by Yudhisthira, and the Pandavas, so Bhishma, they just looked at him, and he was close to death, and he had loved the Pandavas so much, and he had witnessed them suffering, and he was practically in tears, and he said these verses. Yatra Dharma Sato Raja Garapani Vipodara Krishna Asti Gandhavab Chapam Surit Krishna Tatovi Bhag. How could all this have happened to you? All this suffering happened to you? After all, if you have power, people use their power to stop their suffering, because with power you can control. Without power one can't control. So you had so much power. Dharma Sutta, the son of religiosity himself, Dharma, is Yudhisthira. And how could this suffering have happened? And also Gadapaniya, the Kaurava, Bhim, the great powerful warrior and holder of the club. And Krishna Asti Gandhavats Chapam. And the one Arjuna who holds the Gandiva bow, such a powerful archer, the greatest archer in the world, and what to speak of the ultimate thing, Surit Krishna, that Krishna is your Surit, or friend, deepest friend. So how is it possible that this suffering is taking place in the presence of this? So nahi asya kari chil rajan pumam vetti viditsitam. No one can understand the plan of the Lord. Even after trying to understand it, why things happen. Even the sages, muyanti means bewildered, kavyo. The sages are even perfectly bewildered. Why has it happened? So here, so previously he's also said there are two other verses connected to this. When he said this is only time. In other words, the force of irresistible force of material energy that makes things happen, and ultimately Krishna is in control. But why Krishna acts the way he does, no one can understand. Even the greatest sages can't understand. Even Krishna's own mother and father, Devaki and Vasudev, were imprisoned and spent so many years of their life shackled. So how is that possible? So Krishna, his perspective and why he acts the way he does is no one can understand. So Bhishma Dev was bringing this point up. Although Vaishnava's happiness and distress are felt as pleasure and pain, just like ordinary karmic reactions, they are different in a significant sense. Material happiness and distress arising from karma leave a subtle residue, the seed of future entanglement. Such enjoyment and suffering tend towards degradation and increase the danger of falling into hellish oblivion. Happiness and distress generated from the Supreme Lord's desire, however, leave no trace after their immediate purpose has been served. So there's a purificatory purpose, and as soon as that purpose, when it comes from the Lord, is served, then the devotee, because he takes shelter of Krishna, then there is no karma involved in it, future karma. Easiest way to understand this is like, say, a person, an ordinary person, suffers by losing all his wealth. So after he's lost all his wealth, what's in his heart is a desire for still more wealth. Mm. Oh, that happened this time. I will, you know, I will regroup. I will capture everything. I will do more. I will, you know, and that desire is in his heart. So that is, that desire, the residue of desire, remains in his heart even after a difficult circumstance. And therefore that entangles him further. But for a devotee, he learns what Krishna wants him to learn by his suffering. So therefore there is no further entanglement after the immediate purpose of the act is finished. It's finished. So therefore, moreover, the Vaishnava who enjoys such a reciprocation with the Lord, who accepts that it is coming from the Lord, even if it is a slap in some way, then there is no danger of falling down into nescience or ignorance, because of course, because he's accepted it as Krishna, and that means no ignorance. As Yamaraj, the Lord of Death and the Judge of all departed souls, declare, Jivana Bhakti Bhagavan Gunanamadhyam Chetas Chana Smaratita Charana Lavindam Krishnaya No Namati Achira Ekadavi Tan Anayadham Masato Akritavishnakritan. My dear servants, please bring to me only those sinful persons who do not use their tongues to chant the holy name in pastimes and qualities of Krishna, whose hearts do not remember the lotus feet of Krishna even once, and whose heads do not bow down even once before Lord Krishna. Send me those who do not perform their duties towards Vishnu, which are the only duties in human life. Please bring me all such fools and rascals. Bhagavatam 6.3.21, Ajramil, pastime. The beloved devotees of the Lord do not regard as very troublesome the suffering he imposes on them. Indeed, they find that in the end he gives. Indeed, they find that in the end it gives rise to unlimited pleasure, just as a stinging ointment applied by a physician cures his patient's infected eye. In addition, suffering helps protect the confidentiality of devotional service by discouraging intrusions by the faithless. And it also increases the eagerness with which the devotees call upon the Lord to appear. These are all coming from the Srimad Chakravarti Thakura. So there's quite a few reasons why the devotees don't mind it. One is they become eager. The call for Krishna is deeper. Another reason why it happens is it protects the confidentiality of devotional service, because there's such a tremendous reciprocation from Krishna. There's so much to gain from Krishna that people think, cool, I'd like to do that, just to gain something selfish for themselves. So when the difficulties arise, they go. And therefore, the secrets of devotional service protected. If the devotees of Lord Vishnu were complacently happy all the time, he would never have a reason to appear in this world as Krishna and Nisringa and so on. As Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, Paritananaya Sadunam Vinashaya Chidaskritam Dharma Samstapanataya Sambhavam Yuge Yuge. To deliver the pious and annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. And without the Lord showing himself on earth in his original form of Krishna and in the forms of various incarnations, his faithful servants in this Lord would have no opportunity to enjoy his rasa lila and other pastimes. So Krishna comes because of the difficulty of the devotees, and then there's so much good that comes because of that as well, because he performs his, he protects the devotees, but he also performs wonderful pastimes which absorb the devotees' consciousness.
Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur counters a possible objection. What fault would there be in God's incarnating for some other reason than to deliver saintly persons from suffering?
So, because it's an interesting point, obviously, that he causes them suffering and then he comes to remove their suffering. So maybe there would be an easier way to go about it. Someone may argue that. Why didn't he just come?
And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur answers, this whole purport actually comes from Vishnu. Yes, my dear brother, this makes good sense, but you are not expert in understanding spiritual moods. Please listen. It is at night that the sunrise becomes attractive. During the hot summer, it is cold water that gives comfort, and during the cold winter months, that warm water is pleasing. Lamplight appears attractive in darkness, not in the glaring light of day. And when one is distressed by hunger, food tastes especially good. In other words, to strengthen his devotee's mood of dependence on him and longing for him, the Lord arranges for his devotees to go through some suffering, and when he appears in order to deliver them, their gratitude and transcendental pleasure are boundless. And then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur actually says, there's no need to speak more about this subject. Because either one is deep enough to understand it, or one always will say, yeah, but. Yeah, but it doesn't sound right that I have to suffer just because it's going to make me happy later on. I thought you knew everything. Can you think of a better way than that? I could do better than that.
So this that comment by Vishwanath quoted here is, it's all about rasa. Because the devotees, in their difficulty, because of the depth of their calling out to Krishna, they don't actually suffer. Or rather, their suffering is superficial. On the surface only, because there's such a, because the relationship is so deep with Krishna that everything makes everything else appear on the surface. So obviously, if one's relationship is not as deep as this, one isn't going to experience what's being spoken of here. So there's no question of being able to imitate this kind of consciousness for more than about 2 seconds. You can try, but it's not possible. This is exalted consciousness. When we look at the example of Prahlad Maharaj, where Haranyakashipu gave him so much trouble, and then when Lord Nisringadeva appeared, he thought, just imagine what he thought. You know, this man is my father, Haranyakashipu, he was going to kill me. And just to protect me, just because of my little bit of devotion to him, Krishna appears as Lord Nisringadeva. So how much love you did this for me. How much love Prahlad must have experienced. And that ecstatic love is everything. And Lord Nisringadeva, in fact, was captured by that love. And Prahlad, actually, the whole time, he was in no anxiety. From the Bhagavatam description, there was no anxiety because he had the faith of a child. It's like when a child is walking across the street holding his father's hand, and there may be so many cars crossing in going back and forth, and it might be extremely dangerous, in fact. But the child feels no anxiety because of he's holding on tightly to the one who is going to protect him. So, although there's cause for anxiety, because of his simplicity and his trust, he has no anxiety. So Prahlad, amazingly enough, his life was being threatened by the one who was supposed to be his protector, and he had neither anxiety nor fear because of his complete dependence on Krishna. So Prahlad Maharaj's consciousness is considered ideal. Any questions about this? Or comments? I'll just read up to the end of this section. I did it yesterday too. Then we'll finish the purport. When he becomes frustrated in his attempt to make money and instead befriends my devotees, I bestow my special mercy upon him. A person who has thus become sober fully realizes the Absolute is the highest truth, the most subtle and perfect manifestation of spirit, the transcendental existence without end. In this way, realizing that the Supreme Truth is the foundation of his own existence, is freed from the cycle of birth and death. Because I'm difficult to worship, people generally avoid me and instead worship other deities, who are quickly satisfied. When people receive, so because Krishna is difficult to worship, people generally avoid me and instead worship other deities who are quickly satisfied. When people receive kingly opulence from these deities, they become arrogant, intoxicated with pride, and neglectful of their duties. They dare to offend even the demigods who have bestowed benedictions upon them. There was something that I once read in a something like a self-help type of book. Help me to understand. It's very esoteric. It's not hard to understand, but it's esoteric to maintain it. It's very secret, very internal and secret. And it was just a little story that there was a coach. I think he was from East Germany or something like that. He was coaching these young girls. I don't know if you've ever seen the young girls in the Olympics who do the, what's it called? I think?
Gymnastics.
Gymnastics, yeah. It's quite amazing what they do. Did you ever see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? You have ever seen? You have seen? No. It's quite amazing. These little girls, they're only like 12, 13, 14 years old at most. And they can bend their bodies, they jump in the air, they turn around. They have such complete control over their bodies and perfect balance, and it's quite amazing. Of course, these are the best in the world. So this man was training them, and he was so heavy and strict and so heavy. So the parents of some of these girls, every day they'd come home crying. They're only kids, 13, 14 years old, and a little emotional time of life anyway. And he was so strict and heavy, and he'd never say anything good, and just continuously chastise them. So they asked this one man, the parents told this one man, was expert in dealing with others, that it seems like he may be a very good gymnast teacher, but he's not a very good teacher. He doesn't know the art of teaching, because all the girls are completely getting discouraged and they're crying all the time. You know, they're probably not going to make it, even through it, the training. So then I said, okay, I'll talk to him. So he went to talk to the gymnast teacher, he told them, you know, you're making, just the girls are just crying all the time. And then he said, Jesus said, I know. But you should understand that I'm training them to win gold medals in the Olympics. And on that level, that caliber of training is required, that you cannot even make one mistake. One mistake will cause you to lose. And then he said, I've seen it. I've seen it. When one of my girls, if one of my girls goes through this training and perfects their technique to the degree that's required, and without a fault, and they actually win. When they do win, who is the first person they come to thank? They don't go to their mothers. They don't go to their fathers. They cry and come to me. So, so what we're being asked to do is the gold medal of the Olympics. So the training is, it's heavy. It's heavy. Because you can't make mistakes there on this level, practically speaking. And because Krishna is difficult to worship as Krishna, as the Brijvasis worship Krishna, because it takes such purity of love, people generally avoid it. Because it's not just following rules and regulations, it's not being afraid of God, it's not someone died for my sins and therefore I can do whatever I want. No, it's very, very, the road is very, very, very narrow. But if there is love and spontaneity that is born out of love, then it's all completely natural. And then there's also Krishna's reciprocation with the sincerity of the attempt of the devotee. Any questions or comments? We'll just go onward. One question would be, how does one get the depth of realization, or rather the depth of desire? Or to put it back in the metaphor of the young girls with the Olympics, the gymnasts. How does one have such an intense desire when one is meant to be immature and somewhat whimsical? Where is the intensity of desire there to practice so sincerely and withstand the difficulties of the training? Where does that come from? It doesn't fall out of the sky, I'll tell you that. Generally, it takes births to develop it. That sincerity. Or one can say it develops in the association of devotees who have that taste. Or one can say, this is beyond my capacity, so let me just try to become a simple servant of those who are more advanced than me. Or one can cry and lament about one's impurities, sinfulness, and insincerity. It takes off to Krishna's name service. Be careful also about committing offenses. So Tothras, Sukadeva says, Lord Brahma, Lord Krishna, Lord Shiva, and others are able to curse or bless. Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are very quick to curse or bestow benedictions, my dear king, but the infallible Supreme Lord is not. In this connection, an ancient historical account is related concerning how the Lord of Kailash Mountain, Lord Shiva, was put into danger by offering a choice of benedictions to the demon Vrika. So it's funny, not funny, but this story is a, as I suggested, it's a cute story. So it's nice that in one sense a cute story comes after such a heavy topic. Because it's like you take some heavy medicine and quickly you get some sweet. The demon named Vrika, a son of Shakuni, once met Narada on the road. The wicked fellow asked him which of the three chief gods could be pleased most quickly. Narada told him, worship Lord Shiva and you will soon achieve success. He quickly becomes pleased by seeing his worshipper's slightest good qualities and quickly angered by seeing his slightest fault. He became pleased with ten-headed Ravana and also with Bana, when they each chanted his glories, like bards in a royal court. Lord Shiva then bestowed unprecedented power upon each of them, but in both cases he was consequently beset with great difficulty. Banasura ended up, when Banasura became a devotee of Lord Shiva ended up having to fight with Krishna on the occasion of Usha and Aniruddha, his Banasura's daughter and Krishna's grandson. So there was a big battle. And Lord Shiva came to rescue his devotee Banasura. He took sides and Lord Krishna was on the other side, and we can just imagine who won. Lord Shiva used his Shiva Dwara, which uses great heat. That's his ultimate weapon. And Lord Krishna uses his Narayan Dwara, which is cold. And the cold overpowered the heat. It's interesting that Lord Shiva's Shiva Dwara is considered the fever at the time when one is about to leave the body gets feverish. High fever. So, and then Ravana, I'm not so sure about Ravana. His situation, but of course, look what he did. He gave Ravana power, and Ravana used it to fight with Ram. Purport. Ravana worshipped Shiva to gain power and then misused that power to uproot the Lord's residence, sacred Kailash Parvat, so even attacked Lord Shiva's own place. On Banasura's request, Lord Shiva agreed to personally guard Bana's capital, and later he had to fight for Bana against Sri Krishna and his sons. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus advised, the demon proceeded to worship Lord Shiva as Kedaranath. By taking pieces of flesh from his own body and offering them as oblations into the sacred fire, which is Lord Shiva's mouth. Vrikachara became frustrated after failing to obtain a vision of the Lord. Finally, on the seventh day, after dipping his hair into the holy waters of Kedaranath and leaving it wet, he took up a hatchet and prepared to cut off his own head. I guess it seemed like he was going to offer that into the fire, but it's hard to imagine how he was going to be able to find the fire if he was carrying his head all up to speak of being alive. But he wasn't so, it appears that he was quite demonic. Because this is one of the descriptions of a demonic person, or austerity in the mode of ignorance that causes harm to the body. But at that very moment, the supremely merciful Lord Shiva rose up out of the sacrificial fire, looking like the god of fire himself, and he grabbed both arms of the demon to stop him from killing himself, just as we would do. By Lord Shiva's touch, Vigrasura once became whole. His body became whole. Lord Shiva said to him, "My friend, please stop, stop. Ask for me whatever you want, and I'll bestow that boon upon you. Alas, you have subjected your body to great torment for no reason, since I'm pleased with a simple offering of water from those who approach me from shelter." Goswami continued, "The benediction that sinful Vrikasura chose from the Lord would terrify all living beings. Rika said, 'May death come to whomever I touch upon the head with my hand.'" I mean, of all the things to ask for, he was a madman. He was crazy. And anyway, of course he was crazy. He was cutting off his flesh and offering it into the fire, his own flesh. But he was a determined madman. So look what he asked for. He could have done great good for the world. He could have said, "Let cars run on good wishes, and then no one would have to buy petrol anymore." Upon hearing this, Lord Rudra seemed somewhat disturbed. Nonetheless, a descendant of Bharata, he vibrated Om to signify his assent, and granting Vrika the benediction with an ironic smile, as if giving milk to a poisonous snake. To test Lord Shambhu's benediction, the demon then tried to put his hand on the Lord's head, on Lord Shiva's head. Thus Shiva was frightened because of what he himself had done. As the demon pursued him, Lord Shiva fled swiftly from his abode in the north, shaking with terror. He ran as far as the limits of the earth, the sky, and the corners of the universe. The great demigod could only remain silent, not knowing how to counteract the benediction. Then Lord Shiva reached the luminous realm of Vaikuntha, beyond all darkness, where the Supreme Lord Narayana is manifest. That realm is the destination of renunciants who have gained peace and given up all violence against other creatures. Going there, one never returns. Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Lord Shiva entered the planet of Swetadip, a special outpost of the spiritual world within the confines of the material universe. There, in a beautiful white island surrounded by the celestial ocean of milk, Lord Vishnu rests on the serpent bed of Anantasis, making himself available to the demigods when they need his help. The Supreme Lord, who relieves his devotees' distress, had seen from afar that Lord Shiva was in danger. Thus, by his mystic yogamaya potency, he assumed the form of a brahmachari student with the appropriate belt, deerskin, rod, and prayer beads, and came before Vrikasura. Prayer beads mean Rudraksha. The Lord's effulgence glowed brilliantly like fire. Holding Kusha grass in his hand, he humbly greeted the demon. Bhishma Chakravarti Thakur, this is the purport, quotes the disguised Lord Narayana as saying, "For us seers of the absolute truth, all created beings are worthy of respect, and since you are the son of Sukuni, a wise man and a performer of great austerities, you certainly deserve the respectful greeting of a young brahmachari like myself." The Supreme Lord said, "My dear son of Sukuni, you appear tired. Why have you come such a great distance? Please rest for a minute. After all, it is one's body that fulfills all one's desires." In the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada comments, "Before the demon could argue that he had no time to take rest, the Lord began to inform him about the importance of the body, and the demon was convinced. Any man, especially a demon, takes his body to be very important." "Almighty One, please tell us what you intend to do. If we're qualified to hear it, So Krishna was using his bewildering shakti, his potency, to cover up Vrikasura's intense passion. "Usually one accomplishes his purposes by taking help from others." Sukadeva Goswami said, "Thus questioned by the personality of
in language that poured down upon him like sweet nectar, Vrika felt relieved of his fatigue. He described to the Lord everything he had done. The Supreme Lord said, if this is the case, we cannot believe what Shiva says. Shiva is the same Lord of the Pretas and Prasachas whom Daksha cursed to become like a carnivorous hobgoblin. Or best of the demons, if you have any faith in him because he's the spiritual master of the universe, then without delay, put your hand on your head and see what happens. If the word of Lord Shambhu prove untrue in any way, O best of the demons, then kill the liar, so he may never lie again. Lord Shiva may have the power to revive himself after being killed, but at least he would be dissuaded from lying again. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus bewildered by the personality of God, his enchanting, artful words, and his great unlimited potency, foolish Vrika, without realizing what he was doing, placed his hand on his own head. Instantly, his head shattered as if struck by a lightning bolt, and the demon fell down dead. And from the sky were heard cries of Jai, Sadhu, Sadhu, Abhavadivi. This is wonderful things. Nama, Nama, Sadhu, Sadhu, Jai, Jai. Victory, obeisances, well done. The celestial sages, Pittas and Gandharvas, rained down flowers to celebrate the killing of sinful Vrikasura. Now Lord Shiva was out of danger. The Supreme, so what did this prove? That when we get some power, like Lord Shiva gives his devotees, the result is our ruination. And when Krishna gives his benedictions, even though they appear painful, like stinging ointment when one's eye is diseased, they're actually for our benefit, and they elevate us and ultimately bring us to the Lord's feet. The Supreme Personality of Godhead then addressed Lord Girish, who was now out of danger. Just see, O Mahadev, my Lord, how this wicked man has been killed by his own sinful reactions. Indeed, what living being can hope for good fortune if he offends exalted saints? What to speak of offending the Lord and the spiritual master of the universe? According to Śrīla Viṣṇu Chakravarti, the statement of Lord Vishnu implies a mild scolding. My dear possessor of unlimited vision, or you of clear intelligence, benedictions should not be given to wicked demons in this way. You could have been killed, but you were only concerned about saving this poor soul, so you disregarded what would happen as a result. Thus, Acharya Viṣṇu Chakravarti points out Lord Narayan's mild rebuke also highlighted Lord Shiva's exceptional compassion. 40, the final verse. Lord Hari is the direct manifestation, the directly manifested absolute truth, the supreme soul, and the unlimited ocean of inconceivable energies. Anyone who recites or hears this pastime of his saving Lord Shiva will be freed from all enemies and the repetition of birth and death. Srila Śrīla Swami concludes this chapter with the following statement. Bhakta Sankatam Alokya Kripa Puna Vidambuja Giritram Chitra Vaktyatu Mokshyama Sakeshava. When Lord Keshava saw the danger confronting his devotee, his lotus-like heart became filled with sympathy. Thus he delivered Lord Shiva from the consequences of his own eloquent words. Thus in the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 88th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Shiva Saved from Vrikasura. Very good. Have you ever seen the puppet show of this?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, so great. Have you ever seen? Have you ever seen?
Yeah.
Where do you see it?
I don't know. I from the village.
I was Vrika, sir. I think.
so cute. Yes? Any question?
How do we rectify ourselves when we get into these difficult points? And get shaken. My consciousness is not. So how does one bring the? How does one see Krishna's hands when he gets into trouble? And not seeing self-suffering.
Well, your question is sort of, when one is in Maya, how does one see Krishna? Well, there's two questions. First, that wasn't what you asked, what to do. Yes. Because you usually can't see it. If you're in Maya, you can't see it. Especially when it's deep. So there's a time when we can get out of Maya and just, when we see it coming, sort of when we're beginning to, when you fall over the precipice, then there's nothing you can do until you get out to some degree, and then you climb to the surface again and we try again. And that's all one can do on one level, is try again and not become discouraged. If they just simply get up and try again. It's like, this is a hefty answer by the way, it's like a child. The child really wants to walk. So is it that he just, because he really wants to walk, he can walk? No, he has to scrape his knees so many times. He has to fall down so many times. But because of his desire, sometimes he cries and sometimes he needs some encouragement, but he tries again. He tries again, he tries again. No matter how many times he falls down, he tries again. So, we have to try again. So, why do we have to try again? Because what is our choice? Of course, the choice is not to try again. But then, it's not very much of a choice. I mean, there's many devotees who have given up. But Krishna doesn't give up on them either. So he always, sometimes he lets them do what they want, and then they hit a difficult or some kind of a circumstance, and then pulls them back, or they want to come back, or he makes it clear that their desire is manifested again. But we will try to get as far as we can in this life. So that's one part of the answer. And the second is when your real art is to be so sincere, is that before we get very deep into illusion, when we just see it coming, when we call out to Krishna, instead of indulge ourselves in the mind or the. So then we have to call out to Krishna, help us. Instead of taking shelter of the mind, we take shelter of Krishna. So then the question is, how do you become sincere? And that's very much association. So I say with also the most sincereness. But generally that's not hard to find. There's no easy answer, you know. Because it's not it's like, how do you learn how to paint? You know, somebody tell you, well, you have to just move the brush and
you don't know how to paint. And those kind of, sometimes the beginning film even has to take our hand and move it for us.
Yeah.
You have to go through the process of learning how to paint. Huh?
It takes practice
and it takes time. It takes guidance too. You don't become an expert painter by being sincere. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's just guidance. Did you learn Photoshop all by yourself? But there's a help file. Yeah. Did you make use of the help files in Photoshop? Yes?
Yes.
You have to.
Mm-hmm.
So they've done that. They're good, they have a good help system and tutorials. Yeah. And sometimes you have to learn by trial and error. Trial and error, you know that expression?
No.
Trial.
Trial.
You try.
Yeah.
You make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you try again.
And then you go to Google.
And then you learn from everyone else's mistakes. Which is, it comes back to that point.
Mm-hmm.
I have also an opposite question. When you're suffering, you know you're suffering, and sometimes when you're in good, rather a good place, it's easier to forget.
Well, that's why Krishna doesn't.
That's
one of the points.
Very long.
That's what he just said, wasn't it? Who needs God? Everything's great. That doesn't last long, does it?
But sometimes I'm in a good position, so the mind should be easier, and it should be easier to chant, and just get carried away somehow.
In a good sense? Carried away by Krishna?
No, in a bad sense.
Yeah.
You get carried away of Krishna.
Yeah.
Again, think of the mind.
Yeah. So, there's a point where you make a mistake. So you should find that point and not make that mistake. One easy way to do it is you try to help others. When you're doing well, try and help others. Dhruv, you want to look? Dhruva, Hare Krishna. You okay? So you don't mind the attention, okay? You don't mind if we look at you? What to do? Keep going. But it's a chant and takes out of the books. If we don't hear and chant sufficiently, we won't have the strength. And associate with devotees, we won't have the strength to keep trying. We'll find some excuse. Hearing, chanting, and association with devotees. And if we give up hearing and chanting the association of devotees, we think we're doing it by circumstance, choice. It's actually due to offense. Finish. whole thing? The list?
Mm.